cliffcentral.com. Future CEOs on cliffcentral.com.
Welcome back to Future CEOs. What a fantastic conversation. And we have an equally fantastic conversation lined up here with a gentleman by the name of Jason Ray. Now, let me just read a little bit about Jason here, because sometimes when people introduce themselves, they're a little bit too modest. So you're described as an advertising giant.
No.
but maybe I would argue with you a little bit there, because your background is with some advertising giants.
Sure.
So you were at Ogilvy, and you were head of their business development, I think.
That's right. I was the pitch person for Ogilvy. I actually ran their biggest account portfolio. But I was with Ogilvy for 10 years, and it was a good 10 years. It certainly taught me a lot. And then about 10 years ago, I started Radar, and Radar is... my agency.
Now, Radar is no small agency. Certainly from a turnover perspective, you've got a healthy turnover, I understand.
We do. We think it's gigantic, but it's not really in the greater scheme of things.
Sure. But so I don't know if I'm allowed to mention numbers. There was on entrepreneur.co.za. So
right, right.
It said the number 60 million there. If you don't want to tell us anymore, I certainly won't dig. But 60 million is not something to be sneezed at, certainly.
Sure. I mean, advertising is great at their own. Advertisers are great at their own self-promotion, but
sure.
It's a clean kind of turnover figure. A lot of agencies report media billings and a whole bunch of other inflated things. That's clean. That's clean revenue. So, for a small independent agency that's kind of organically grown without the support of a network agency, it's okay. it's not enough yet.
Well, yeah, of course. I think we're never quite satisfied, are we? Especially when we're the founders of the business. You founded this business with yourself and a few partners that you then later bought out?
Yeah, there were four partners in the business. We actually all came from Ogilvy.
And
in the manner of all businesses, it was great when the money wasn't coming in. As soon as the money started coming in, then we... I think we had different vision.
Sure.
About 3 years ago, I kind of went to the board and I said, I'm going to resign, actually, because I think we have different goals.
Yes.
And all three of my partners turned around and said, actually, if you're going to resign, we'd rather you buy our 70%. So that's what I did.
Right. Okay. Interesting.
And of course, I didn't have the money to do that. So I asked them to give me 12 months and then I did it.
Well, that's very decent of them.
I'm more like begged.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about pre-beg and then post-beg. Your business started out quite small. You've got a certain pedigree to you. How did that aid you as you started this business? And then I want to talk about the business quite specifically, because you're quite a strong advocate of a flat structure, and we'll talk about that in a moment, or getting as close to your customers as possible.
Yeah.
But let's talk about your background and how that helped you, if it helped you, and maybe even some of the struggle it was to break away from some of the big brands and the thinking around the big brands that you were involved in.
I mean, I think it's always difficult to start your own business because, particularly if you come from a big corporate agency, in my case, in many ways, their kind of label has carried you for so long.
Sure.
So starting when you're Jason Ray Inc. is kind of tough.
Yeah, yeah.
We were really lucky in that a client of mine moved a whole bunch of business. So right from the offset, we didn't have the classic problems of a new startup. We didn't have a cash flow problem. We had a client that flooded us with work.
Okay.
So in that way, we were really, really fortunate. Of course, we had strategically made sure that that was the case.
Sure.
It was also a blessing and a curse in a kind of funny way, because we became really busy really quickly.
Yeah.
And about 5 years in, we were thinking, shit, what happened and where did that first 5 years go? Which happened really quickly. But I think our pedigree is really about the clients that we work on. Our ambition at Radar was never to have a huge agency. In fact, it was never to replicate the agencies from whence we'd come.
Yeah.
It was never about headcount. And in fact, we believe in a really sharp, focused, non-layered structure,
yes,
which is the opposite of how agencies are typically are typically built simply because agencies' remuneration are normally on headcount. So what happens is agencies fill boardrooms with people. And we wanted to do the reverse. And I think we've managed to achieve that. And we also said that we didn't want to have lots of clients. We also didn't want to do the restaurant down the road, and that wasn't being arrogant. We wanted to work on
big business.
So we're lucky enough to have 7 blue chip clients, and in fact in the 10 years that we've been in business, only one client has ever left us.
Oh wow, that's impressive.
I
want to just to quickly explore why you left in the first place. So I can imagine that people who understand really who and what Ogilvy, that kind of brand is, they would say, why in the world would you leave when you were so close to being on top there? What was the motivation?
I think Ogilvy was a fantastic period of my life.
Yeah.
And after 10 years, I kind of looked at the executive creative director one day, and we kind of, agencies are born in bars, and ours certainly was. And I think we just wanted to kind of carve our own course.
Yeah.
The kind of work that we wanted to do as well was non-traditional. In many ways, we thought we were the sort of trailblazers. Doesn't everybody think they're a trailblazer when they start a business? But so we wanted to have a different way of working, I think.
Were you able to achieve that in spite of the fact that you suddenly had this this massive contract that you had to suddenly work with this client?
Yeah, we did. And we said, firstly, we bought a little cottage and we made it a 60s collectible shop. So when our big corporate client came to the boardroom, literally people would wander in off the street and try buy the lamp. and we said we were really going to be fun and non-corporate. And we managed to achieve that, I think, for about 3 years.
Fantastic.
But actually, even when you come to the radar offices in Joburg or Cape Town, it's the most atypical agency you ever walk into, I think.
I'm going to have to visit your premises then.
Very, very
quickly, Radar the brand, where did that come from? Just some people have really interesting stories. Do you have an interesting story?
We started we actually called ourselves Under the Radar when we started, which quickly became an acronym UTR, which frankly made us sound like an STD. And so
I might have said courier company, but STD fun.
The worst thing was they used to say, "Oh, here's Jason Ray. He's ex Ogilvy, but now called UTR."
Yeah.
So when I took over, with the partnership shift about 3 years ago, the first thing I did was shorten it to Radar.
Mm.
And people think that Jason Ray Radar, there was absolutely no connection. Actually, it was my business partner that came up with the name Under the Radar.
Then I do want us to then talk about now the post-panic, the post-big. You do believe in a flat structure. You do
completely.
Believe in getting very, very close to your clients. Let's talk about that for a moment. And you've got the benefit of hindsight, the benefit of being in a quite a deep or large structure like an Ogilvy. And no one's criticizing that necessarily. It just is what it is in a corporate environment. What's the comparison? Let's talk about that a little bit, please.
So in our industry, there's a lot of juniorization. So we've spoken about headcount earlier. Agencies fill their staff complement with lots of juniors. We said we wanted to be the reverse, so very top heavy and lighter in terms of layer. So everything about Radar is about the elimination of layer. And you know, layers just get in the way. They get in the way between good advertising and the consumer. They certainly get in the way between the advertising agency and the client.
Yep.
And most agencies meet their clients once a week around a progress report, which is kind of like an operational status report, if you like. And we said we absolutely weren't going to do that. So the first thing we did was to move into our clients' offices. So our account people actually physically sit in our clients' offices.
That's remarkable.
And that makes the agency conversation a completely different one. You're no longer an occasion. You're not the one once a week visit. You're part of the conversation. And I think that's been the key point of difference for us. It's certainly made the work better and sharper and more focused. We're not second-guessing anymore. And there's no kind of Chinese whispers, you know. So that immediacy makes the work in my opinion, much more strategically relevant. Mm.
Absolutely.
We say, you know, in the old days, you used to talk about above the line, below the line, yes. which is such kind of old-fashioned concepts. But we say that we're before the line. and like literally, it. It's that. Mm. It's and, you know, you can only brief. My job in the agency is a strategist. You can only be a good strategist if you're close to the problem.
Mm. No. Very, very good point. Here's a question, though. How do you prevent these clients of yours from just taking your employee and saying, well, you seem to be able to deploy this appropriately. Why don't you just give it a go?
I guess that is. I guess that the line becomes so invisible, so that you're not sure if you're the client or the agency. But I think what helps us there is the seniority of people that we recruit, and we add people. We add men, and women. Mm. In fact, we're mostly women at Radar, but and that's good. So I think we're really clear that we want to be ad people, not marketers.
Okay, no, very, very good point. Very good distinction. So I do want us to just go to this idea of, because you speak about, and I'm just going to read a little bit here, and I want to go into the detail of for our future CEOs community. So, and it's along the veins that we're talking. This doesn't mean they pick up the phone every day to check in. That's managing. Now, too many people, too many certainly entrepreneurs, feel like they have to micromanage. How have you been able to separate yourself from this idea that, well, now they're potentially off-site, they're somewhere else, but how do you manage in that kind of environment? How do you find that confidence to do it?
I don't think I have.
Okay, interesting.
I think, you know, running your own business is very, very intimate. Mm. So I'm certainly hands deep in most jobs in the agency. So I'm very, very close to my team. And, you know, there are only 26 people at Radar. So it's not impossible to do that.
Sure.
But I think I would argue that's not the same as trying to micromanage. I think what our clients expect and hope of us is that we're overcommitted. And so if any client phones me, I'm pretty much aware of most jobs in the agency.
Okay, now interesting. Here's a nice statement. So you mentioned one of your rules at least, or maybe it was another one. No, you've only mentioned one of the rules. The other one of them is you only work for clients you like.
It's the number one rule. It's the only rule we really live by. And honestly, you don't have a conversation with people you don't like. And in my industry, having the right conversation is key. And you know, we've all been around the block, and I didn't want to drive to a client ever with a lump in my gut. Mm. And I'm really lucky. I have to say, super, super lucky. Most of our businesses come from client referral, and we've got a community of clients that we really like. And that's something worth talking about, because I think that's super special. You know, I don't come to work, I leap out of bed in the morning.
Mm. No, that
I don't drag myself to work.
And that is special. I do want us to go where you just touched on, because it is word of mouth. There's a referral element to the way that you develop new business. But how have you been able to do that? The rule here, we don't pitch for work.
I know. So by the way, there were three rules. So when we were in that bar,
yes,
at Ogilvy, we said there were three things. Number one, we'd only work for clients that we liked. Number two, we wouldn't pitch, and that was because I was the pitch person and just bloody tired of pitching.
Okay.
And number three, that there would be no layers. No politics, no layers at Radar. We've managed to keep two broken the second one.
Okay.
So for the last 2 years, we have been going out to pitch, but we do it very judiciously. You know, we don't pitch on anything and everything.
Mm.
What we tend to do is, and we've done it this year, we win a piece of business and we close the door again. The Radar model is all about close contact, and we can only truly deliver that if we're not indiscriminate with the kind of work we do and for whom we do it. And then, you know, we're really careful to grow organically so that we don't start to replicate the agency structures
yep.
that we say we're different from.
Mm.
And I guess that's the temptation. The temptation is to try hoover up. We kind of try to resist that temptation.
How do you do that, though, in a world that's so growth and or fast growth crazy, it seems. How do you do that? How do you not get caught up?
I think you know, it's the kind of clients that we've attracted. Okay. They're kind of big and blue chip, so they don't come around, you know, every corner. You know, that golden rule about only working for clients that you like. Mm. So what we try to do is to have real chemistry sessions to make sure that they want to be in the room with us as much as we want to be in the room with them. And then we try to match the team to the client temperature, and whether that's about a work or a personality, I mean, different levels of temperature. But it's really important that we have intimate, close, personal conversation. And again, as I said earlier, you only do that with people you like.
I like how your rules have allowed you to stay within a certain set of parameters. It almost forces you to grow organically. And it's very, very nice.
And if you're not clear about who you are, you can't expect anybody else to be.
Absolutely.
So we try to be clear about who we are.
You did speak about breaking one of the rules. Let's talk about maybe a couple of failures and other rules that you may have broken.
My God. I've broken every rule.
You also said that you've made all the mistakes that there are to make.
Sure.
But what does that mean? What does that even mean?
Well, you know, don't forget, I mean, we were all ad people that worked in big agency structures. So we were used to having pretty much everything done for us apart from our kind of craft, if you like. So when I came to Radar, I had absolutely no idea how to read a balance sheet. I knew nothing about tax. And I think that, for me, has been the huge growth curve. You know, I've learned a lot, and how we've learned is, we couldn't go and afford to go and hire a whole bunch of heavyweight professionals. Mm. So we learned by the mistakes we made.
Yeah, someone's asking for a tax clearance certificate or something, you're like, oh crap, what is that?
Back to, they're all acronyms.
So the biggest mistake that you've made, and the biggest lesson that you've learned from that mistake. And please tell us a story. We love stories.
I think, we were really, the key mistake we made in the early days of the business was not really investing properly in our finance function.
Okay.
So we were so seduced about trying to build our creative studio and making sure that we had the right strategy people in the room. But we kind of forgot that the engine room of any business, the heartbeat of any business, is cash flow.
Yep.
And it was okay because we could keep filling the top pipeline. But it's only been over the last 4 years that we've realized that actually the person that sits in the finance chair is as important as the executive creative director. Yep. And when we made that mind shift and we employed somebody who frankly at the time was, I think, three times more than we were used to paying. Mm. But that was the most worthy investment we ever made.
It reminds me of Gil Ovid and Run Neuner, the creative council. They said this as well.
Did they say the same thing?
They said that they underinvested. They got someone in early on who they were just trying to save money. But in actual fact, the knock-on effect of that was millions and millions of rands a couple of years later, but they could see it coming through. So they definitely developed the, as you said, the finance function.
Yeah.
So from a personal perspective, if we can go back to
I'm
you.
I'm now scared.
nothing to be scared about, but I think there's a certain, how do I say it, a certain arrogance that you potentially could have at this point, you yourself. You've worked for some big businesses. You've got some blue chip clients. You've got a very healthy turnover in your business. How do you avoid this? I've done it on the corporate side. I'm now seeming to be able to do it on the entrepreneurial side. How do you avoid walking into a room and saying, I'm the man?
I've nowhere near reached the destination.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't feel I've achieved. You know, also, you know, what's interesting is that you always imagine that these things will take much quicker than you ever thought.
Sure.
So we're a kind of classic example of an overnight success that took 10 years.
Yes.
So doing it organically, I mean, we're also a self-funded business. So we started with a tiny bit of money. Mm. Actually cashed in my pension.
Same as our previous guest, amazing.
Start the company. But I think we're nowhere near done yet. And until we're an agency of record and on the lips of most of the senior marketers in this country, then maybe we can sit back. But at this point, we're very much leaning forward.
Mm. So I hear you on the vision side. Let's talk a little bit of the strategy side. How do you plan to be able to do that, but then remain nimble and stick... really hold true to your rules, but then also achieve that. Let's look forward a little bit.
You know, I think one of the recent lessons that I've certainly learned is to kind of stick to your knitting and to understand what you're good at in the business.
Okay.
So what I'm disastrous at is probably the sort of day-to-day management in the business. I'm a much better strategist than I am an MD.
Okay.
So I went and employed one who's much
absolutely
better than me. And so I think if we can identify in the small band of people that we are where our core strengths lie and then complement each other perfectly, as opposed to kind of falling into kind of managerial stuff that we may not be best suited for. So I'm really lucky in that I've got a core management team who pretty much run the agency, which allows me to have the direct client contact, which lubricates the relationship, which just makes the work better.
Well, I've asked this question to a lot of CEOs. In this particular instance, you really are the CEO, and it's what do you see?
I would never call myself that, though. How weird is that?
And I'd love to explore. We don't have enough time to explore why you wouldn't do that. Some people just say there's an arrogance around this idea of CEO. But what do CEOs, or maybe MDs, but what do CEOs actually do? And I like the CEO-COO distinction. So what's the difference between the two? Because some people mix that up.
I'm not sure. I'm sure there's a textbook answer that I don't know.
I don't know the textbook answer either.
But all I know is that companies are led by demonstration. So as the kind of head of the company, I suppose, I always try to lead by demonstration.
Mm, okay, very nice.
And I think that hard work and passion for what you do is infectious. The rest is all platitude.
And I like that word platitude because it is. There's so much talk and so much nonsense around it. We don't want nonsense from you for this final answer because we have run out of time. It's been a very quick half hour. Thank you very much for being on the show. If you could go back in time and talk to the 20-year-old you, what advice would you give the 20-year-old future CEO you?
Gosh. What advice? I think what I've been disastrous, and I'm talking now, this is personal. I think for the first 9 years of my business, I thought my business was me. And so work-life balance, I kind of understood the notion, but I didn't really live it. And more recently, I've realized that that's got a lifespan of its own. So... I think I'm discovering that I'm not just radar.
Mm, very, very nice. Well, Jason Ray, founder and MD, not strategist. At Radar.
Strategist.
We'll go with founder of Radar. Thank you for being on the show today. It really has been a great pleasure. Thank you for your insights, and we really appreciate it. All right, guys, we'll be with you same time, same place next week, helping you to fast track your career and also grow your business. We'll see you next week. CliffCentral.com.